Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Beth Fertig, in for Brian Lehr. Lately, it seems like the Bloomberg administration has been making deals with everyone. The city teachers have a new contract, and so do the sanitation workers. Even drivers who got a parking ticket last week during the snowstorm were able to make their case, and the mayor eventually let them off the hook. So what about the principals? They've been working without a contract for more than 3 years. Are they the only ones who can't strike a deal with this mayor? The city's 6,000 principals, assistant principals, and other school administrators are represented by the Council of Supervisors and Administrators, which is also called the CSA. They now have a new president, Ernest Logan. He's a former English teacher, assistant principal, and principal. Logan was also a vice president of the union before its president retired late last year. And we should note he's the union's first Black president. Ernest Logan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Beth. Good morning.
Good morning. Good, thanks. So tell us, first of all, why are your members still without a contract?
Well, Beth, I think you started on it. Maybe it's lost in somebody's inbox. I appreciated that comment today. We don't have a contract because it really has not been the desire, I think, until this point, to really start to seriously talk about getting this contract done.
For 3 years? No one from the Bloomberg administration has been serious?
Well, let me just say this. I think that many times you have to wait for the stars to align. I think the stars are starting to align, and there are people who are having serious conversations. I think in the last 30 days, we've probably had maybe more than a half dozen or more conversations, real conversations regarding this contract.
Why the last 30 days? We're talking about 3 years. You know, were the astrological star signs not lined up until then?
Well, you know, I think that part of the issue is that people need to decide that it's now in their best interest to come to an agreement. I think the Department of Ed would like to do a lot of things, and they need to get this out of the way. But I also believe that my members, who have consistently emailed and the chancellor, the mayor, the deputy mayor, and said to them, everybody's running around the country talking about what great work that we do. Everyone's talking about how important it is that we do a wonderful job, that great schools are led by great leaders. It's time for us to have a contract.
Okay, well, there's obviously some sticking points. So I know you're the head of the union, and you were part of the negotiating team all along, and you're going to be a little deferential to your members and not want to spill everything on the table. But come on, what are the main sticking points right now?
There are three open items, and I'll tell you what they are. I've told them to my members. Money, the workday, and this whole issue of excessing.
Excessing by you mean?
Well, excessing is a process when the system has to close a school or redesign a school, that members have certain rights that are in state law as well as in the contract regarding seniority, et cetera. And there's been a lot of talk about changing some of those. And our members have said to us, protect my rights. I've earned them. And so there have been some conversation about how to do some things to allow the system to make changes that it wants to make, but also to protect members' rights.
I'm Beth Fertig, singing for Brian Lehr. You're listening to WNYC 93.9 FM and AM 820. We're talking with Ernest Logan, head of the City Principals Union. So, you know, we're talking about these sticking points like excessing. Go back to in the fall. There was sort of it seemed like a state of war between your union and the city because Mayor Bloomberg wanted to make sure that assistant principals, who are also part of your union, wouldn't have to be hired by principals at the start of the school year if they found themselves without a position for some reason and a principal didn't want them. And he even went so far as to find them jobs within the administration, millions of dollars the city spent finding them jobs, claiming that there were principals who didn't want them, that these people somehow were only going to get jobs based on seniority, and that wasn't fair to force a principal to hire an assistant principal based solely on seniority. Was that fair for the mayor to say principals should not have to hire someone just based on seniority?
Well, let's first put the truth into the whole conversation, Beth. Most people did not know that there were qualified veteran assistant principals available for them. When people realized that there were changes in schools, it was too late for them to even go out and look for a position or to make themselves available to a principal. So it wasn't that people did not want them. What we found from many of our members when we spoke to them, principals who were looking for APs, is that they were discouraged from hiring people who were in excess. So we first believe that what's out there is that schools could have used that extra person, that veteran who had some experience in this. And when people are put in excess, it's no fault of their own. The school is either downsized or closed. Now, these are all satisfactory individuals. And yet, what the mayor said, and I think the deputy mayor cleaned it up somewhat, is that people, these were not people who were unsatisfactory. These are people who had done their work, who had been rated satisfactory, but through no fault of their own, their schools were closed.
So this is what, when you're talking about accessing people who don't have a job because changes have been made in the course of the school year and September rolls around, and this happens all the time every year with teachers and principals and assistant principals. But do you think the mayor, because at one point principals were making this allegation that the mayor was trying to split your union, pitting assistant principals against principals, because by portraying this as a situation in which principals were having people forced upon them, it made it seem as though these were conflicting interests within one union. An assistant principal wants to keep their job seniority and get a job no matter what come September, but the principal may not want that particular person in their building.
Well, it was interesting, Beth, that when we explained it to our members, we pointed out that principals and APs have the same accessing rights. What would happen to you as a principal if all of a sudden your school closed? You were entitled to a position, but now all of a sudden the superintendent says, well, I don't want anybody to force to you on, upon me. When we explained it to the members, they said, oops, we all have the same rights.
So is this what...
I don't want to be caught out there myself like that.
So is this what you're holding on to in your negotiations now? You want them to have the right to go wherever they can in the fall?
No, what we would like to do is the following, and I'll just share just some of this. We want to make sure that people's rights are respected. We are willing to change some of the things that we need to do, but we are not going to allow wholesale just removal of members from the unit.
Okay.
And we believe that you should not be... you know, as you said, they spent millions of dollars. I don't know what amount that is. But right now we have a situation where we have teachers floating around from place to place. We believe that what you should do is take these veteran people who have lots of experience and utilize them to assist those people who need the help. We need to hold on to our experienced supervisors, especially now that we're getting ready to do a whole new reform and reorganization.
I want to get to that just in a minute, but
okay.
Didn't the teachers, though, weren't they able to make a similar deal with the city to protect people who were, you know, floating around without jobs, but also wouldn't have to bump somebody that a principal wanted in their building? Because what this comes down to is, shouldn't the principals have the right to choose whoever they want? You want to protect those members who are floating around without an exact job to do come September, but you would also want, presumably, your principals to have the right to choose who they want in their buildings.
Beth, historically, the principals in this city, and I've been one, have always selected who their administrative team will be. Always. There's never been a major problem about it. This administration attempted to make this an issue. It was never an issue. Principals have always had an opportunity to interview people, to make a decision, and that's all we've asked. And in fact, what we encouraged them to do is that, because their issue was, well, we have these interim acting people that they've selected, we don't want to bump them. We said, fine, we won't bump them. But if there's an open vacancy, then our member who's in excess should have a right to at least an interview and a conversation about that position. And that's where the sticking point was. We couldn't even get that.
Well, you told the New York Sun recently you thought a contract could happen maybe in 24 or 48 hours. That was last week. Where are we at now? Do you think that you could still get a contract, or is this likely to go to arbitration?
Well, you know, we're moving toward the fact-finding issue, the whole resolution of this. We believe, and I believe, let me just talk from my perspective. I've been doing this, as you said, as the lead negotiator for now in this contract, 44 months, Beth. I've had more conversations, as I said to you, in the last month with the department and the city than I've had in the past. But I am encouraged by the dialogue. But you know what? This city is based on collaboration and trust, and I'm not really feeling the trust.
All right. Well, I want to encourage principals and assistant principals to call in since school is off this week. We want to hear from you. What do you think about the contract impasse, so to speak? It's not technically an impasse, but there is
no
contract.
Beth, we are an impasse. We have declared impasse. That's why we're moving toward the fact-finding.
Okay, so technically you are then. All right, anyway, if you're an assistant principal or principal and you want to share your experiences or thoughts with us, we're at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. My guest is Ernest Logan, president of the Council of Supervisors and Administrators, also known as the Principals Union. I want to ask you about some of the school reforms that we're hearing about, because the chancellor is getting ready for another round of restructuring to start this fall. The chancellor says this is about putting more power in the hands of principals. And at a meeting with business leaders recently, Chancellor Joel Klein described the principals as chief executive officers of their schools. Let's listen, okay?
No longer will the principals be the agent for the bureaucracy in the building, where principals are told what they need, whether they want it or not. I believe we need to unleash the creative power of our great leaders and educators, letting them select the tools and support they want to meet the needs of the students they serve.
So, Ernest Logan, what do you make of that, freeing the principals, giving them more power?
You know, Beth, every time I've heard that quote a couple of times, I'd like to see what kind of power that they're giving principals. Let's be realistic. The power is always in the purse. And anytime anyone decides by taking off a percentage at the very top of how much money you're going to get to a school and all these mandates that you're required to have, you don't really have that power. Now, let's get away from all of that. That's not what this is all about. The reality is that principals have always been empowered. It has been the structure that has locked principals into a lockstep way of doing things. I was a very creative leader. Why? Because I worked around the edges somewhat.
You're talking about when you were in
Brownsville?
Is that where you were a principal?
Right. You did what was best for your particular school because I knew that school. Now, yeah, there's a need to free up from some of the constraints that the department puts on people. But you also have to have the support, Beth. Let me go to this empowerment initiative, which I think is a wonderful thing for people.
Okay, let's back up and explain it a little bit. The chancellor created an empowerment zone. There's now about 330 principals who have joined this zone. And what they do is they're, according to the Department of Education and some principals who I've talked to who are part of this zone, they believe that it gives them more freedom from the bureaucracy and from the curriculum standards in exchange, well, not the standards, but from the unified curriculum. And in exchange, they still have to meet the standards and they have to prove that they're getting results. There are assessments that their students have to take on an interim basis. And they also get a little bit more money from the Board of Ed, from the Department of Ed. So the principals, some of them seem happy with this approach, and the chancellor is now offering in the fall to broaden this, to allow more principals to join the empowerment zone or to form a network with other schools or to partner with an outside community organization, which will not be a private management group like Edison Schools, who says it's nonprofits only. So these are the reforms he's proposing in the fall. They're all aimed at giving principals more management control over their schools, less interference supposedly from the central bureaucracy, and in exchange they have to meet standards and prove that their kids are getting results. So from what you've seen so far with the empowerment zone that we've described for principals, is this working?
Yeah. Let's start with something. Everyone is required to meet standards, Beth. Everyone is required to prove that what they were doing is improving student achievement. There's no change in that. So there's nothing that's saying that all of a sudden now that you're empowered, you have to do that. We've always been required to do that. So let's first deal with that. Number two, Many of my members have said, you know, it's an interesting idea. I thought I was getting additional money, but then I found out I had to pay for the things that I used to get out of the region or out of the district I'm now paying for. So that additional money is still causing me to pay for the same things I used to get for free, so I've got nothing additional. As for resources and support, many of my members are reporting that they're not getting the support they need. They're still having problems getting their questions answered. They're still having problems just navigating through this system, because the system is still there in control. They haven't given up the control, and they won't give up the control. What they've done is given more of the responsibility at the school, and they now allow you to go right to the source of the school to blame if something is not right. And that's what this has all come about. And you know what? We still have many concerns about the empowerment, but we believe in empowerment. I do. But it must be true empowerment.
Okay, we're going to come back to that thought in just a break. We have to take a break right now. My guest is Ernest Logan of the Council of Supervisors and Administrators, the Principals Union. I'm Beth Fertig, sitting in for Brian Lehr. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to 93.9 FM and AM 820 WNYC. I'm Beth Fertig, sitting in for Brian Lehr, and my guest is Ernest Logan, president of the Council of Supervisors and Administrators, which represents New York City principals and assistant principals. We're talking about the changes that are going on in the city's public schools and the fact that New York City and the Principals Union are at an impasse right now, unable to agree on a contract after more than 3 years. Mr. Logan, we were talking earlier about why you're at this impasse. Do principals feel like they're not getting enough power over their buildings? Should they be able to choose assistant principals? And I encouraged your members to call, and we've got a caller, Mike, from Brooklyn. You're saying that I believe it's been a problem for you to make the choices that you want in your building. Can you tell us a little bit about where you're a principal and what your issues have been?
Well, under the old system, I had an interim acting assistant principal, and there was a school that was phased out, and I was assigned an assistant principal in her place. And it became a very difficult situation, and ultimately I had to rate that assistant principal unsatisfactory. It was very time-consuming. It was very divisive in the building. It was a very difficult situation for me and for the school at the time.
Can you say where your school is?
It's in Brooklyn.
You want to tell us which school?
No, that's okay.
Okay. You're on the air right now with the president of your union, Ernest Logan. Mr. Logan, you were saying before that this really isn't an issue, that there are no unsatisfactory people floating around that principals have to hire. What do you make of this?
Well, Beth, I didn't say that there weren't any unsatisfactory people. I think Mike did the exact thing he was required to do. And I understand that, as Mike says, it was somewhat time-consuming. But ultimately, what he found is that this individual, who was indeed satisfactory somewhere else, was not satisfactory in his building. And he did exactly what he was supposed to do as the rating officer, to either to assist the person to make them satisfactory or to do the work that's required to remove them out of that position.
So
and
you think,
I commend Mike for doing what he's supposed to do.
So then you think the current system works, Mr. Logan. Mike, do you agree that it does work and you shouldn't have that the city should not be forcing these people to give up their rights?
I will say it's become a lot easier to choose your own people. But my concern is that, I think what I heard Ernest say is that they at least have the right to an interview and a conversation. And I agree with that, except even realistically, if you've already chosen somebody, if you have an idea of somebody who's a team player, someone you know from within your building, which most principals end up developing their own leadership from within, it becomes just an exercise in a ritual, not really a true interview mm-hmm. for that person and for the principal.
So thanks very much, Mike. So Ernest Logan, is it worth this little time constraint that he's talking about, having to fill out forms, going through all of this to protect the rights of assistant principals?
Well, Beth, I think we need to understand that due process is something that is earned over time, and is not something that should be taken lightly. It is something that, that you have earned. And it comes from your ability to be successful in wherever you were. And once you are successful, and you have been successful, and you've changed your situation, you should have a right to prove yourself. There were many ways that we attempted to do this in all this conversation with the city, because we thought that there were ways to really make it work. We've run into some blockades, et cetera, with this. But I want you to be very clear, and I don't want your readers, your listeners, to think that we're not really trying to work together. See, I have this thing about trust and collaboration, Beth. I'm the new guy here.
You're like
the new old guy? The old guy who's now a new guy.
I was going to say, you're hardly a new guy.
Well, I'm the new guy here, and I want to be able to have a feeling of trust and collaboration with this administration. Because I honestly believe that we want the same thing for this city and for our system. But we'll only get there if we can learn to trust and truly have a conversation and a dialogue that makes sense.
I want to ask you something. We have maybe this is a little bit provocative, but we have a caller from Manhattan, Giovanni. You're on the air. Your question has to do with why principals even need a union.
Correct.
I hear Ernest laughing in the background. Would you like to present your question to him, please?
Yeah, it seems to me that if you have a principal of a building that it's antithetical to everything that you would want to do in terms of managing that building, to have a situation like he's saying where someone's excised in some other district or some other school come in and say, look, because of seniority, because what he's really saying is seniority is the question, to come in and say, look, I want to have a job.
Okay, so what do you think of that, Mr. Logan?
Well, I think I would like to ask Giovanni, though, does he believe that people should have due process rights?
Well, this is not even a question of due process. Due process is when someone, I understand, comes in and says, look, you know, I'm being challenged, for example, on my performance as a person in a job in a building, and I believe that person should have an avenue by which the person who accuses him or says that you're not doing a job, let's say his superior, the principal, to defend himself.
Giovanni, do you work in the schools?
Pardon?
Do you work in the schools?
Yeah, I used to work in the schools. I mean, I was a teacher. But I don't believe it's a person who is looking for a job simply because he's been excessed has a question of due process. He doesn't have a job. There's no job in his building. And now he's going and saying, because I have seniority, you know, I think I have something, where I should be, goes to a principal and says, look, I should get a job.
Okay.
Doesn't make sense to me. And finally, I think that since people who are administrators, starting with the principal, who is the principal manager in that building, are in confidential situations in management, that they shouldn't have a union.
Thank you for your comment. Mr. Logan, I'd like to hear your response
to Beth, that. Let's first start with something. It is called principal teacher. That's what it is in state law. You are the principal teacher. You're not principal manager. You're the principal teacher. You're the instructional leader. We've taken this position and made it all types of things because all of a sudden education has become, let's throw it into education and we'll do it. So we feed, we immunize, we clothe, we do everything. But the position is principal teacher. I think the critical piece that I want to just touch on, and what your caller said, is that we're not saying that people have a right to a building. These are employees of the city of New York. They're not employed by a particular school. They're employed by the city of New York. And I think people need to understand that. Just because the city of New York closes one particular school, it hasn't closed the city of New York. People are not hired because of one building. They're hired as an employee of the city of New York.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the management changes now that the chancellor is proposing, because we touched on that earlier. The chancellor views your members as CEOs of your buildings and says he's trying this. All of these changes are about giving your members more control, control over who they can hire, control over what textbooks they want to use, presumably control over what field trips they want to take their students on. But the bottom line is going to be results. You're going to be measured. And that's why starting this fall, there are going to be more assessments. There are quality review teams now going into the schools, management consultants, if you want to call them, but educators from Cambridge Associates, I believe, in England. They go to your schools. They meet with the principals. They talk to parents about how the schools are run. And all of this, this use of data-driven testing, is going to add up to a report card the schools are going to get starting next year. They're going to be graded A through F. What do you think of this system of rating a school, giving parents information about how well that school is doing? Is this the type of management reform that's needed to really put principals on the line and show whether they're getting results?
Well, Beth, let's start off with first, parents should have an ability to understand what is happening in their child's school. We've tried to do that for a very long time with the state report card, with the city's report card, et cetera. Using data is very important to do that. But there's more than just data. That's why we were very supportive of the school quality review. It's something that we've seen many different ways of doing this. From in the days early on, we used to call it the PASS review. We've called it the school quality review. We've had it from England once before years ago. I was involved with some people looking at this. Now what we've done is put this all together, and we're saying we're going to grade schools of what they are, A, B, C, D, whatever. But we have something called the Principal's Performance Review. Now, if you put all that together, then you'll be able to talk about the leadership of the school environment. But the bottom line is, what is student achievement? Because that's what we should be looking at. Now, I've heard all these things to talk about testing, testing, testing. There are many variables we need to look at to decide what a school is like. No one is shying away from increased accountability. We're the first ones to have it. But we need to make school leaders supported so that, and they can get the professional development to be successful at what they need to do.
So what would that support be?
Well, number one is that let's talk about the administrative teams. We have schools that have over 1,500 children. They might have just the principal and one assistant principal, and that means they're supervising 50 to 60 teachers, plus other staff. Support would be that when a principal picks up the phone and calls the legal people to ask a question about a contract of one of the people in that building, someone's there to give them the information, the correct information in a timely manner. That when a principal calls and says, look, a kid walked in here, the bus wasn't late, there's somebody who handles that, so that the principal is not handling all of that. The principal can focus on student achievement and instruction.
Have things gotten worse in that respect since Mayor Bloomberg took over the schools, or has this just always been the same issue?
Well, Beth, I think you want me to be contentious. I'm not going to do that. Let me just say I believe that things, there have been a lot of bumps in this road, a lot of bumps. I think that what we have not done, and not done really well, and anybody who says that they have, is that we have not really made the support mechanism stronger. We've made them very diverse and they're haphazard. As much as people used to talk about the community school superintendent and the community school district office, people in a school, in a district, knew who to call, knew who to go to for the answer. Right now, we're confused about where to go to for an answer.
Because there are no community school districts anymore?
Well, no, it's not that. It's just that too many people don't have the answers. Beth, there was one point of reference. It was your community superintendent or your superintendent, whether it was high schools or K through 8 schools. There was a point of reference. There was one person you called who gave you advice, information, and support. And now it's everything is falling on the school level.
I'm Beth Ferdig, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. My guest is Ernest Logan, president of the Council of Supervisors and Administrators, which represents the New York City principals and assistant principals. We have a few more minutes with Mr. Logan, and we've been taking your calls at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-WNYC. 833-9692. This issue of the quality reviews, the letter grading of schools that's going to start this fall, they started that in Florida, actually. Former Governor Jeb Bush began that system of letter grading. You're at a conference right now with principals. What are you hearing? How has that worked in other districts?
Well, Beth, it is interesting that it didn't really start in Florida. We did this in New York some years ago. It also came out of England. Her Majesty's, it was critical friends and colleagues. They came into your building. They looked over what you were doing. You had a wonderful conversation about what was right, what was wrong, developed or undeveloped. Then we morphed that into something called the pass review. We see this as just another attempt, and we hope makes sense this time, to really share with the school leadership and the school community what works and what doesn't work in that school. The question becomes, after you've done all of the review, what do you do next? And I've yet to hear the answer to that one.
Okay, Jackie from Manhattan, very quickly, you have a question.
Well, actually, I want to say that the report cards failed in Florida. They were harmful. There's research on that. They failed many years ago in Kentucky. And in New York, what they have is a bell curve. So 5% of it's already been determined that 5% of the schools will fail.
Are you a teacher or a principal?
I was a principal, and I'm very familiar with the research. So it's failed in Florida. Why is it happening here? I think with the school quality review, as the gentleman said, that was started by Tom Sobel over 15 years ago, and there have been various iterations of that. I want to make the point that the public has, the parents have been marginalized in all of this. There's been no consultation. And on February 28th at 6:30 at St. Barton's Cathedral on 34th Street and 2nd Avenue, there's going to be a demonstration of parents, teachers, students, and elected officials to tell the chancellor that he has to bring the public back into public education.
Okay.
And this is sponsored by the Working Families Party and other groups.
Thank you for telling us that. We have to wrap up this segment, but very quickly, Mr. Logan, do you agree that these quality reviews are just going to be a negative thing, or could they shed any light on the schools that parents may need and maybe get them more involved?
Beth, I believe they will shed some light on schools. As I said to you, the question is really, what do we do with it after we get that? And I just want to thank Jackie for bringing it up, because CSA also will be involved February 28th. We've always talked about let's collaborate, let's put the public back in education. Let's really seriously talk and have this idea of trust and understanding, and let's work together for what's best for our children. And I'm a firm believer that when you have more people in the conversation and the discussion, then you tend to do much better at what you get in regards to results.
Well, we've certainly been hearing that from a lot of parents lately with regards to the whole situation with the busing changes. Thank you so much. My guest was Ernest Logan, president of the Council of Supervisors and Administrators, which represents principals and assistant principals. I'm Beth Verdig, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. Coming up, how to declutter your life with the life hacker Gina Trapani. Stay tuned.